The door is reopening to international students, but not in the way it was pre-pandemic. The government's allowing 5,000 new international students into the country from the middle of the year, and last week announced that Immigration New Zealand will begin processing other study visas at that time, brought forward from October. There are currently 12,000 foreign students in the country, compared with 86,000 in a normal year pre-pandemic, across all parts of the education sector, and worth $5 billion to the economy. The university sector alone used to have around 20,000 foreign students, worth $1.2 billion. The government's warned that it does not intend to go back to a bums-on-seats model, and that international students coming here will face post-study work rights rules and tougher financial resources requirements. All this while fewer students are enrolled in all universities in the first trimester of this year. Chris Whelan is Executive Director of Universities New Zealand. Kia ora, Chris.
Kia ora.
It's been a tough year for universities. Are you happy to have the reopening date brought forward?
Look, it's great to have certainty. It's been a long, long period with our borders closed, and we've had a surprisingly large number of students stick with us throughout this period, at least 5,000 students still studying offshore waiting to get here. It'll be a massive relief for those students that they can finally complete the degrees that they've signed up for.
Are many going to come back?
Well, that is the question. We are optimistic. We'll be out and reminding people, I think, of the unique value proposition of New Zealand. We are and have always been seen as a safe, tolerant, welcoming destination for students to come and get an English language sort of qualification. We hope that we can remind students, their parents and their agents that nothing's changed.
Yes, except they've been away for a year or 2 years and unable to continue. And I guess there's more competition now internationally as well. Perhaps some have already moved on to other options, Chris.
Very much so. And we know that countries like the United Kingdom and Canada, their student enrolments are hugely above what they were pre-COVID, mainly because countries like New Zealand and Australia have been closed for such a long time. So whether students will come back to us, I mean, I've got to be optimistic, but only time will tell.
What of the changes that have been announced, and particularly the relationship with visa processing?
So that's going to be another big question for us. Obviously, the delay in reopening borders has been partly linked to the capacity of Immigration New Zealand to process visas. We are told that capacity is now there. Boy, we hope it is, because it would be awful if it's the bureaucracy that prevents such a large export sector from restarting.
What do you see as the impact of some of the changes that have been announced, however?
Again, hard to know. I mean, what we do know is that for well over 80% of students, when they're considering which country to go and study at, the ability to get work experience while living and studying in an English language environment is absolutely critical. But despite that, only about a third of students actually take up their ability to work while studying. We also know that a lot of students like the ability to be able to get a little bit of work experience after they finish, before they return home.
The Minister's comments about cracking down on student visas as a backdoor to residency, and it actually took some action about that before the pandemic. Can you comment, how extensive was the pattern of coming here, getting your degree, getting some work experience, and then staying on, converting to a work visa?
So there was certainly quite a bit of it happening 7 to 10 years ago, and then some quite major crackdowns over that period of time on providers that really were offering qualifications that were the easiest, simplest, cheapest sort of pathway to residency. But they're gone now. I don't really see anything of that left actually in the market. There's been a lot of work between government and providers to make sure that actually the graduates that are coming through, that are getting post-study work rights, are getting meaningful jobs. So in the university sector, for example, about 30% of international students are still here 5 years after graduating, and 10 out of 11 of them are in degree level jobs. So, top high skilled jobs like doctors, teachers, and so on.
Students in non-degree level courses will no longer be able to work in New Zealand after graduating unless they apply to fill a skills gap. is that going to plug whatever was left of the gaps in that issue?
Look, I think that's a massive question, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that one plays out. There's an awful lot of sectors that have relied on being able to attract international graduates into areas like sort of aged care, nursing, and things like that. Now the requirement's going to be that they can pay above the median wage, $27 something or other. So how this all plays out for sectors that desperately need these workers and can't get them from the New Zealand workforce, again, I think just time is going to tell. I think we are going to see some pretty major shortages. Ask me again in 12 months.
That's for graduates, however. Non-graduates can't apply at all, again, unless they are filling skills gaps. So in some ways, is it a little bit of weasel words? We've got skill gaps in so many areas at the moment that many of them might be able to make their way onto those skills lists.
In theory, many of them will be able to, but the key criteria is going to be, the skills lists are very limited to the areas where we just don't produce enough degree qualified graduates ourselves. One example, we generally have always relied on about a third of our veterinarians being recruited offshore. So it's not going to help with a lot of the other areas, like, I mentioned aged care before, where there's a large workforce needs and just a real difficulty getting enough skilled and interested New Zealanders actually into those jobs.
Let's come back to the immediate. What is your optimism that visa processing will be fast and efficient? The Minister said earlier that one of the reasons for the original date of October was that visa processing wouldn't cope with what is expected to be high demand for study visas. We've already discussed demand may be well below what it's been in the past, but do you have confidence that Immigration New Zealand can process visas in a timely manner?
Look, I'm cautiously optimistic. We're hearing assurances from Immigration New Zealand. They've brought most of their overseas operations back to New Zealand. They've automated a lot of their systems. I'm told that those systems are now operating, but they're still extending those systems into different visa classes, like students. The fact that they've brought the deadlines for reopening the borders forward, gives me optimism that actually Immigration New Zealand has got it set up.
What has been the impact and what will be the impact of this whole shift in the landscape on the finances of universities? Let's discuss first about what's happening to domestic enrolments. I think they are down in the first trimester of this year for all universities, but were they a little bit artificially bumped up, the domestics, due to the closed borders and job losses early on, etc.?
Yes, they were. And, there's a bit of a sort of a complicated cycle here where in 2020, it looked like we were settling in for a long haul of COVID and that international student numbers would be massively down. We also thought that domestic numbers would be flat. In fact, in 2021, the opposite almost happened. Our international student numbers held up far better than we ever would have predicted. So, and our domestic numbers got a bump, mainly, I think, because borders were closed. This year, 2022, our domestic numbers have gone back to something a bit closer to pre-COVID, but our international student numbers are well, well down. So we're actually, ironically, going to be reporting probably quite healthy financial statements for 2021 because of all the cost cutting that was done in 2020. But we're going to really start seeing those pressures this year and for the next few years because, not only are we missing first-year international students, we're now missing second- and third-year international student cohorts that just haven't flowed through.
Are we ever going to get back to $5 billion to the economy and whatever cut of that went directly through the coffers of the universities, which, of course, are already heavily public-funded, but which topped up with that international money?
Look, I don't know. I hope so. I mean, there are some major benefits that come from international education beyond the financial, although the financial benefits, for every dollar that basically a university generates through fees, about $2 goes out into the wider community for flats, food, travel, and so on. But there are also massive benefits for, our connections with the rest of the world. And we really need those back. I mean, so much of our research system, for example, is benefits from the fact that, most of the international PhDs that graduate here when they return home and, say, work in their own domestic university system, they keep collaborating with us.
They weren't mainly PhD students, 86,000, were they, though, a year?
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, can we just talk a little bit more about what's happening for students at the moment? They've had 2 years of disruptions. Many of them have been having their educations on Zoom. What are universities doing now with respect to lectures being back on site, hybrid in some instances, just trying to get some sense of the university experience back? Because anecdotally, we hear quite a bit of frustration from students that this wasn't what they signed up for. How are universities approaching this?
So in a number of ways. I mean, I think COVID has accelerated trends that were happening before COVID itself, and probably we've had about a 10-year change in about 2 years. Before COVID, already increasing amounts of university technology was teaching at least was technology enriched. In other words, technology was being used to automate a lot of things like delivery of lectures where there's not much interaction and students are really receiving information. But students were still hugely appreciating and enjoying things like the hands-on experience of laboratories and workshops and working with their peers. So what we've seen this year is a huge enthusiasm from students to be back on campus and to be back mixing and mingling with their friends. But they will still want a lot of that technology-enriched learning, thing that makes learning a bit...
Zoom being technology-enriched is a debatable point, but I appreciate the flexibility to do some work online rather than have to physically appear can be a benefit. But do they have the choice in most universities now to get back to lectures, or is it just labs, or is it a bit of this and a bit of that? Where are most at?
It's moved predominantly back to in-person lectures, but with a lot more students choosing to watch their lectures online. So it's giving students more choice around the channels through which they engage.
Okay. Choice is the key word. Choice as opposed to, sorry, it's online, that's your only option. One final point. What do we know about the impact of the changes in the way assessments happened over the last 2.5 years for its own sake, but also with respect to learning outcomes? Is someone studying that and studying it hard?
Yes, so we're looking at it sort of centrally, and there's a group of the Deputy Vice Chancellors Academic, who are the academic leaders in the university sector, who have been talking about it pretty much monthly. A lot of lessons, because we've been forced to do assessment online, so a lot of the challenges around how do you prevent cheating and things like that have come to the front. We haven't, I think, found the perfect solution yet, and there are some universities that have stuck with online assessment this year just to avoid the risk of close downs again, disrupting in-person examinations. Again, it's work in progress.
Chris, thank you. Chris Whelan is Executive Director of Universities New Zealand.